Week one in the NFL is now in the books, and as always, the National Football League gives us plenty to talk about, and no one better to talk about it with than our NFL insider, Jason Lockenfora. Jason, one NFL week in the books, sir. How are you today?
Look, I am ecstatic that we're playing football, and we're playing quality football, and we've got all 32 teams playing football, and it's a phenomenal thing.
Yeah, and like it looked like football. Like you would notice it when a field goal would be kicked or when there was a punt. But other than that, it wasn't. You weren't hit in the face. That 2020 was a whole lot different watching those games.
No, I mean, look, I've never been one who subscribes to the sports as an escape. I mean, sports is part of life. It's part of our culture. It's interwoven with and deals with many of the same problems that greater society deals with. So. I don't think you can separate, everything on your plate and pretend that this is from another planet that has nothing to do with or isn't in some way interwoven with everything else. But having said all that, you're right. You watch the games, and I've talked to a number of players, as well. Some are at home, some are on the road. And it was always weird for them, and they obviously are always seeing the empty stands. But, you kind of get into the flow of the game, and your adrenaline takes over and your muscle memory kicks in, and it's football and it's high quality football. I didn't think it looked, I can think of some other week ones where I thought the quality of play was a lot worse. And that's when they played four preseason games. And even, back to the early 2000s, when you still had longer training camps and two-a-days and all that stuff under the old collective bargaining agreement. And this still looked better than some of that. I thought the TV networks did a great job of presenting the product. I mean, yes, the sideline reporters are in the stands, and there's nobody in the stands except for cutoffs or, cutouts of people or, 14,000 people at Arrowhead. So it's different. It's weird. But when the games got going and you're watching 10 games at once in for what you guys is an 11 a.m. window on Sunday morning, I just found myself completely engrossed by everything that was going on and just trying to keep up. And it felt, I don't want to say normal, but it felt somewhat like my normal routine.
Mm-hmm. Another way that nature truly is healing is Adam Gase was making decisions that people disagreed with. In this case, with the Le'Veon Bell apparently getting hurt, being put back into the game, getting hurt more, and is now on the IR. Well, what do you make of that whole situation?
Look, this thing has been a disaster from the giddy-up. I mean, this is what happens when you have bad ownership. You have ownership that's misguided. You have ownership that is sort of knee-jerk and reactionary. And you have Mike Maccagnan leading a team through a draft. You hire a coach who doesn't seem like he's going to be aligned with their vision. And then within, 5-6 months, what was it? It was still May. So, yeah, within 5 months of the coach being hired, the general manager's fired, and the coach is already making it clear that if he was in charge, he wouldn't have made many of the big free agent splurges that they just made. I mean, how was it supposed to work? Like, who thought, Chris and Woody Johnson, they got it figured out now? I mean, no, this is what they do. They double down on tumult and tension and, internal politics. And, it was Tannenbaum versus Rex, and then it was Rex versus Idzik. And, I mean, you could just keep – it just never ends. And then it was, we think we're back to normal with Bowles and Maccagnan, but we're really not. And we're firing the coach, but we're keeping the GM. And so do I think it's going to end well there? No. Would they love to trade Le'Veon Bell by the deadline? Sure. They wanted to trade him last year. Nobody's taken that contract. And now he's got to miss 3 weeks at least. So now we're at best case, he would play 3 or 4 games and then they try to peddle him. Week 8 at the deadline, I don't think anybody's touching that. Not at, $14 million a year or whatever. Typical Jets.
Is Adam Gase sitting on the hottest seat in the NFL? Would he be one of the favorites for first coach's canned?
It's hot. it's hot. I mean, it's real hot in Detroit also, though. You know, I'm thinking of, our oven, and you've got the two front burners and the two back burners. I mean, Gase and Patricia are on the front burners. I think Dan Quinn's on the back burner somewhere. We'll see what comes from, Houston's got to play. I don't think they'll do it in season, so I won't even put Houston there in terms of an in-season move. But yeah, there's a little bit of competition. But certainly the way Detroit fell apart and defensively, which is Patricia's side of the ball, and not just fell apart defensively, but fell apart defensively at home. Fell apart defensively at home with a 17-point lead or whatever. Fell apart defensively at home with a 17-point lead against Mitch Trubisky. Like, you just and then wait a minute. This guy in 2-plus years has won fewer games than the guy we fired him for won in his last game there, in his last season there. That math doesn't work well. And Atlanta, Dan Quinn, it just hasn't. I mean, you go back to the Super Bowl, and it's just been diminishing return after diminishing return after diminishing return, and they still can't really play much defense. They pick up a lot of yards, but it's in kind of hollow and garbage time, chasing games. That wasn't what you wanted to see out of him in week one.
Well, and the Atlanta one, like, if your team's going to be bad at the thing you're supposed to be the best at, that doesn't really seem all that great for a head coach.
Well, no, but look, they kept him around last year, and the defense got better after he stepped away from it and let Raheem Morris take over. And why he had Raheem Morris on his offensive staff and not running the defense already? And there's a lot of things you could look at and say, how has this gone on that long? But everything comes to an end, and this owner, despite really slow starts the last 2 years, has decided not to fire this guy at the bye week twice in a row, despite really considering it the last 2 years. Maybe he finally does something in season this year. I don't know. I mean, the fact that there's no fans in the stands, maybe that saves some of these guys, because it's like sometimes you're making that move to keep people coming to games to show that I hear your pain, I feel your pain, and I'm going to throw you some red meat so you come back and see if this new thing works. That dynamic's not at play, at least right now. Maybe by the trade deadline, maybe by the middle of the season, more cities have fans at their stadiums. But it's, look, 2019 for Dan Quinn, for Adam Gase, for Matt Patricia, always looked like it could be pretty bleak, and that's not a good start for any of them.
Organizations that are, or an organization that's usually in this conversation, the Cleveland Browns, they had a rough one in week one, and now some rumblings that Odell Beckham Jr. might be being shopped. What's the latest on Cleveland with their star receiver?
No, he's not being shopped. Like, they didn't play one game of the season and watch him drop a couple balls and start making calls saying, we got to get him out of here. Like, that's not how it works. That's not what's going on. We just had, 2 weekends ago, 800 guys being cut and every team talking to every other team about potential waiver claims and trades and free agents and, hey, maybe you trade us this guy and we'll trade you that guy because we have to cut him. So Odell didn't get traded then. There wasn't a whole lot of Odell rumors then. This first game didn't go well for anybody associated with that football team, especially on offense. Or special teams, or really kind of defense. So, yeah, it didn't really go well for anybody. But, no, it's not like Odell Beckham is all of a sudden now being chopped all over the place. But, like, did teams inquire a little bit about Odell through the summer? Sure. And has he already been traded once? Yeah. And is he absolutely a part of their core moving forward? No. Myles Garrett is, and they think Nick Chubb is, and Nick Chubb probably will be, and they extended Kareem Hunt for a few years. But beyond that, there's a lot of uncertainty. So could he be moved by the deadline? Sure. Is anything cooking right now? Is there we got to get this guy out of here? No. And honestly, trading him right now, what are you getting for? You know what I mean? Like you'd be like selling low on a stock for a team that still needs, a lot of things. Short and long term to go right to ever get out of this perennial rut. So I don't get the sense that anything's imminent.
chatting with our NFL insider Jason Lockenfora here on the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. The Washington football team with an impressive come-from-behind win over the Philadelphia Eagles in Week 1. How for real are the Washington?
Oh, no.
No?
yeah, I don't think they're for real. That was a great second-half performance. Their front seven is for real. It better be for real. Pretty much everybody up there is a first or second round pick. They should be able to get a pass rush. They should be better against the run. They should give your offensive line a tough game. Secondary is still an issue, and the offense is not very good. They found a way to win this game and come down, you know, come out of a 17-0 hole, and good for them. But the Eagles did themselves no favors. The Eagles kept, you know, having 5- and 7-step dropbacks on a day where their right tackle didn't play and a lot of their offensive line looked like it didn't come ready to play. Carson Wentz held the ball too long. It was a strange game plan. They didn't really adjust. They want to throw all these deep balls, but they have hardly any healthy wide receivers to throw them to. It was a strange one. And it's one that may haunt the Eagles short and long term. But I still think the Redskins are, you know, look, before that game, I would have said they're a 4-win team. Now I'll say they're a 5- or 6-win team.
Another game that kind of caught my attention was Minnesota against Green Bay. When I've thought of Minnesota the last 5 years or so, it's been that defense, and they got just throttled by Green Bay in Week 1. How concerned should Minnesota be by that Week 1 result?
Oh, they should be concerned, because I mean, this should be a two-horse race for the division, and they just lost one at home. Now home field isn't what it used to be because of the fans and yada yada yada. But no, that's look. The games last year at least were nip and tuck, and were pretty close. Aaron Rodgers just did whatever he wanted against that defense, and that defense has been in steady decline for I'd say 3 years now, and it looks like it's fallen off a cliff. You take Danielle Hunter out of there, you know, add an Ngakoue who had a lot to adjust to and wasn't quite ready yet. And Mike Zimmer is just so conservative to a fault. It doesn't seem to matter who the play caller is. They just want to come out and play not to lose. And on a day when Aaron Rodgers is throwing it all over the yard however he wants, Kirk Cousins had 5 pass attempts at halftime. I mean, you're paying him. You're paying him over $30 million a year to play quarterback for you. Like, you made that decision, you signed him, and then you doubled down on it and extended him. This isn't Pee Wee football. This is the National Football League. Your $30 million quarterback in a key game at home in Week 1 is 3 for 5 passing in the first half. Like, I mean, why? Okay. So, you know, do I think the Green Bay is a juggernaut? No, I didn't last year. The record indicated they were. I didn't really buy them. If Aaron Rodgers is allowed to play unshackled football like this every week, do I think that they'll be a lot better on that side of the ball? I do. I still have questions about their defense over the long haul. But that was of all the results of the weekend, when you talk about ones that might really resonate, because of that division, because I think Chicago and Detroit are so much sort of the also-rans, that's a big win for Green Bay.
Last one for you. A lot of eyes on Tampa Bay against New Orleans. Tom Brady throws a couple of picks. Bruce Arians placing a lot of it on Tom Brady postgame and then kind of walks it back after. But what did you make of Week 1 of the Tom Brady experiment in Tampa Bay?
It wasn't great. It was rocky. That's not what we're used to seeing from a Tom Brady led team coming out of the shoot. A lot of balls just airmailed, footwork off, maybe seeing a little bit of ghost when it came to the pass rush at times. It's a feeling out process. I wasn't quite sure what to make of that game. I picked the Saints. I figured the Saints would win because of continuity and everything else. But I thought it might be one of these games where, you know, the last team holding the ball wins. You know, somebody kicks a 35-yard field goal at the end to win. It wasn't that close. And Tom wasn't sharp. But we'll see. I'm not ready to go nuclear and freak out. That's one of the harder games the Bucks are going to have to play. That was obviously a weird scenario for Tom Brady. And they've got a lot of new parts there that they need to sort of let mesh and coalesce and bring together. So I'll be very interested to see what sort of adjustments they make and what they look like the next couple of weeks. But I think their defense is pretty good. They ran the ball at times better than we've seen them run it. That's a very low bar to clear because they haven't really run it at all for two or three years there. But they showed some signs of life in that regard. And you know there's a lot of talent there. So, we'll see. But it wasn't quite the debut that I know Tom would have wanted, and it's not what we're used to seeing out of, Tom Brady football teams in week one.
Thank you for this, as always, Jason. Really appreciate it. We'll chat later this week.
Always my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. There is Jason Lockenfora.